Yes, indeed. That is the Dirty Dozen Brass Band out of New Orleans with John the Revelator from their 2004 acclaimed album, Funeral for a Friend. This album is not sorrowful at all, although it is associated with a funeral, but in the tradition of New Orleans, they take the body to different points within the neighborhood and they play a different song, and it is accompanied by dance and so forth. And it is simply a going away gift of saying, hey, we glad you were here and that you gave us some of your joy and some of your good vibes while you were here. So that's all it is. It's not a downer at all. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And what are we going to talk about today? Well, first, I'm curious about what you heard yesterday. And it was a speech by Dr. Martin Luther King, like we have never heard him this way, in which he comes out blasting about how are we going to fix the situation that we're in? How do we confront an intransigent and deeply entrenched system that is racist, white supremacist, to use these words, that is not at all in tune with what the vast majority of people want? He called it, in fact, socialism for the rich, capitalism for the poor. And by that, of course, he meant that our system of government seems to be more concerned about making the wealthy wealthier and making the poor poorer. Now, that was a special meeting that he had, spoke at, I should say. It was a convention designed to look at ways in which we could get out of this mess that we're in. And I did remark that there was no other such convention held. And I think that's significant. Why was there no further discussion held? Well, of course, within 2 years of that convention, Martin Luther King, who went to Memphis, Tennessee, to organize support for striking sanitation workers, was on the balcony of a local black-owned motel, the Lorraine Motel, when an assassin's bullet cut him down. So I'm saying this to say, it isn't like we haven't had really excellent advice and prescient minds warning us about what we have to do, telling us the major issues that we face, but also telling us ways in which we can confront and mobilize against these systems. This has been going on for so many years. So many kings have come along. So many people have called it, literally called it right. And we just set their thoughts, their warnings, their advice to the side as if, well, you know, it's nice to hear them talk, but we're not prepared to go beyond hearing them talk. We don't support people who come forward, who present good ideas. We don't mobilize behind them. We don't protect them from the inevitable attacks that they will suffer. We don't support their organizations financially so that they're able to do simple things like get a mailing out. So we have some serious thinking to do about our role in perpetuating the awesome the obstacles before us. What is the answer here? What is going on? What possibly is the rationale for our behavior? Why are we not listening? Why are we not taking to heart what these people are telling us? Is it that we don't respect them? We don't care? We've heard these things before, and we really don't want to hear them again. Our head is in a different space. We have other things to do with our time. Fighting is old-fashioned. And we need not exercise ourselves, even in our own interests. What is going on? So, last week I talked about the fact that it is as if we have entered a twilight zone in which the familiar is strange, chaos is the order of the day. Not much jars us or shakes us up or shocks our conscience because we lost those assets a long time ago. We are looking for something clearly because we know that what we've got is not what we deserve or need. But I'm not so clear that we are fashioning our own solutions ourselves with our vision, with our understanding. As progressive people, even revolutionary people, that we're just talking, we're not doing. So I want to ask you, especially after yesterday's incredible speech by Dr. Martin Luther King, more than 50 years ago, I'm asking, what's up with us? What do we need? Do we really need pervasive tragedy? Do we need extreme pain? What is it that we need to wake us up and shake us out of these doldrums that we're in? What's a workable idea? So let's talk about that for a little while. At 888-874-4888. What do you think is happening? And I'm not asking this is some kind of a kind of useless exercise. I truly believe that we are in greater trouble than we know. And we're running out of time to fix anything that is linked to our survival, to put our house in order somehow. It doesn't have to be perfect, but to put our house in order so that when the thing happens, we aren't where we can see that we will be, which is reacting, purely reacting, with no plan, with no visionary leadership, with no sense of where do we go? How do we manage? I don't want to sound alarmist, but you see what is going on. And it will get worse. And if we follow history, the people on the lower or lowest rungs of the ladder will take the worst beating. They will suffer the most. I don't want to be all doom and gloom, because we do have some inklings, we have some indications that in some quarters people are beginning to try and put something together that would work to stave off what we know will be an inevitable series of attacks. And by attacks, I don't talk about military attack or anything like that, although that is not out of the question. But I'm talking about organized campaigns to subjugate populations already suffering to even greater suffering. I think this is important for us to consider. So what are your thoughts? If you listened to King's speech yesterday, what do you glean from that speech as an instruction from Dr. Martin Luther King as to what we are to be pondering at this time, what we ought to be thinking about as it relates to our survival? And then we also have to look at the context of his speech. Here is a man who could have just, you know, stayed home and had a nice weekend. But he came out to help, to mobilize, to plan. He paid with his life. And you listen to that speech and you understand why. And he actually said it. The country will not tolerate people of color planning a future for themselves, planning their survival together for themselves, fashioning an entirely different approach from that which is being planned for them. All right, enough of my talking. 888-874-4888 from Marcus, from Wisconsin, I mean. Marcus, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Ms. Leed. Always a pleasure to hear you, and thanks for that excellent broadcast yesterday. That's important history.
Thank you.
It's important to remember that Martin Luther King Jr. received the media Black Santa Claus treatment about 10 or 15 years ago. While he was alive, the Kennedy administration really disliked him. They tried to block him in every single way possible. They had to eventually pretend that they liked him, because after he was killed. But and as long as King was talking about, you know, racist sheriffs down in the South and stuff like that, stuff that was sort of more narrow in focus, they tolerated him. But when his attention turned to the Poor People's Campaign or the Vietnam War, he was actively, openly opposed by the Democrats. These are the people you have been convinced are somehow your allies. Take the current government shutdown. The media modulation is that somehow this is the evil Republicans and the Democrats taking a principled stance. No, the actuality is this is both corrupt political parties who have no answers to our actual problems working together to commit class warfare against public workers and their children. Look, the operative thing here is, why do we continue to do this stuff? Why do we sit on our hands? The answer is pretty clear. It's something called cowardice. Hitler understood this. It's right in Mein Kampf. He said, look, when you're seizing absolute power, you don't just stick a gun in people's faces. They'll recognize it as a tyranny and want to get rid of it. He said, so you have to make it look like there's two opposing sides, see, that are always engaged in this terrible battle to see who can best serve the needs of the wonderful sacred people. He said, but that's a show. You got to put on that show for the idiots to keep them out of your hair. He said, the real decision-making goes on in private. It's made by a small, powerful elite, and policy is crafted in their interests. Now, this should be clear just from the last 10 years. Obama and the Democrats had 2 years to themselves to do whatever they wanted, and they bailed out the banks. Trump and the Republicans had 2 years to do whatever they wanted, and they increased the military budget to the biggest amount ever in history anywhere and gave an enormous tax cut to the rich. Meanwhile, you have to go without pay. And Americans willingly, without protest, go to work without pay. Working without pay, there's a name for that. It's called slavery. And the first thing Americans have to do is get some basic courage to realize what they're actually up against, that some magical daddy is not going to fix it for you. You're going to have to organize and agitate and raise bloody hell. And if you don't, they're going to smash you. Look, this is a global fascist movement. They see no reason not to go ahead and put the finishing touches on their global project, because it's only sporadic uprisings against it. France, the Los Angeles teachers are out. Support them. 70,000 workers just went out right on the border where Trump just made a speech in Brownsville, right, basically right across the street is Matamoros. 70,000 Mexican workers have gone out. They're calling for a general strike. The media isn't going to tell you about it. I'll tell you when you know you're doing it right. When even wonderful services like Progressive Radio Network shift their focus from exclusive gab to become organizing tools for what people are demanding of them. Then you know you've got it right. But as long as you're just tuned in to see how somebody can enlighten you and keep telling you that water is wet, this is only going to get worse. People, you've got to do something. You've got to sit down quietly in a chair and figure out what it is you can physically do. Everybody wastes an hour a day, at least. figure out what you can do with half of that, and you'll have an entirely different looking country. The world will be different. But as long as you're following the path that the culture gives you, you know, all you can think about is work and cranking out more kids so you never have to take any responsibility for the society. You can just say, well, all I can care about is my kids. I don't have any time. Look, the people in France have the same conditions. They came out on the weekends. They use their heads. You have to do the same thing. Everybody. It crosses all lines of race. Whether you're a manager, you have to take this society and democratize it. Open it up.
Stop. How close do you think we are to an openly fascist state?
Well, it's been that way since the Reagan administration. The Bush family, they have open connections, a history to the Nazi regime, to the Third Reich. The media never reported this. Now, it was common knowledge, though. All kinds of educated people knew about it. Nobody did a thing. One of the significant things that's happened since Reagan, it happened after Nixon, after Clinton. The intelligentsia, the people who are actually informed and capable in the United States, many of them became expatriates. Many of the members of the government over the last 35, 40 years in places like Sweden and the Netherlands, you know, where they have sane governments, are ex-Americans. They're expatriates who got out of here because back during Reagan and Nixon, they could see what was coming. The rest of the population is just quiescent. As long as there's high-speed internet and a stupid game they can look at, they don't have a problem with the gulag. Fine, bring it on. Will I be comfortable? That's all that matters. So people have got to wake up to the point where they recognize their own personal complicity in this mess. That's the issue. Just blaming power, of course. They're always going to line up and try to make your life miserable. If there's no opposition, they'll continue.
You've gotten us started today the way Martin Luther King got us started yesterday. And you've made things clear. Now it's the ball is in our court, and we have to make it a point to do something. Thank you so much, Marcus, for calling and contributing today. From Edgewater, E, you're on the air, and the number to call is 888-874-4888. You're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice. Good afternoon, dear.
Thank you. And good afternoon to you.
And also to the PRM family.
Thank you.
I don't know if it was the show on Monday where we were talking about Donald Trump's wall or if it was the speech of the great Martin Luther King yesterday. But I came up with a plan. It just like came into my head that would, at the end, it would provide 20 housing for 20 million people. So the plan is to build, instead of a meaningless wall for $5 billion, which wouldn't really serve the purpose because people could get over it and under it, instead of a wall, why not housing for homeless and low-income families that can't afford, that are being priced out of their neighborhoods? You would still create a barrier that Trump wants, and at the same time, you would be creating housing for 20 million people. And this is based on each unit costing $100,000. Where I lived in Brooklyn on Senator Street in Bay Ridge, On both sides of the street were brownstone houses, three stories high. They were all connected, and that was the block, you know. 30 brownstones on one side, 30 brownstones on the other side. So they could build something like that in one straight line for the 2,000-mile stretch of the border based on $100,000 per unit, three families per unit. I come up with the cost of $120 billion. Now, the owner of Amazon, his name is Bezos? I'm not sure what his
name is. Bezos.
Yeah, he just got divorced from his wife, and her share of the settlement was $120 billion. Now, that would cover the cost of building these buildings for 2,000. It would require 1,200,000 buildings would have to be built, and it would cost $120 billion. Now, not only that, I just brought up the Amazon, that just to show you how much money they have. Now, the Clintons have a charitable foundation that was created to help people that don't have a place to live. Now, we have 600,000 homeless people in the United States.
Yeah, well, they did a really lousy job of creating housing in Haiti, for which $10 billion is yet to be accounted for.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. They can now donate some of that money towards this project that I've come up with here. And also the Trumps, who's Donald Trump's
I think you're missing a point. The point is about borders. Is it, in your view, a rational approach to use people essentially as cannon fodder and build housing, but the real intent is to have them be buffers between their countries of origin and the United States? The issue still is the United States has a lousy foreign policy. It has had it for a long time. It has created, in some cases, the outflow from Central and South America. It has created the circumstances under which these people are leaving. They're subjected to incredible amounts of crime. They have little or no employment. They have little or no amenities of life, so they want to leave. And that is understandable. Excuse me. We have gone so many years without having a cogent policy. What is U.S. policy in these Central and South American countries from which we are seeing and are going to be seeing unending flows northward? They're going to go wherever they can because the issue is survival. They don't want to come to the United States for a vacation. So what is the priority?
I understand this, Eutrice, and that's the whole point of me coming up with this plan. Because you can't just allow as many people that want to come to this country to just come in, because there's no job for the people that are already living in this country. And I brought that point up on Friday, on For Your Mind Friday, that a lot of people are just choosing to join the military because there's no jobs available for them to get, other than working in McDonald's or something like that. So it's a better idea for them to join the military and maybe get a free education. And then when they get married in the military, they get housing and stuff. But instead of doing that, they can do what I'm saying here. And the people that want to come into the country, they wouldn't be causing a burden, because they could be housed for free in these buildings that they would build on this borderline. and it would create this barrier that Trump wants to, so that the illegals couldn't come in, but then people who want to legally come into the country can be housed in these buildings that could be freely generated by solar panels like Harvey would like to have on all the roofs of these buildings. And they could have communal gardens for each 90 families that will live on each block. And then you're solving so many problems just by creating this wall of buildings.
You're solving problems, but creating perhaps many more. And perhaps. In any event, it is not a permanent solution. That's my point.
Why isn't it a permanent solution?
A permanent solution lies in sensible policy. We don't have that. We haven't had it for years or decades even. Do you understand what the U.S. foreign policy is in Central and South America? Do you know it? No. We don't know what it is. It changes from administration to administration, and sometimes with this administration, it changes from day to day. We have no idea. There is no cogent policy making when it comes to the South and Central American countries. We just don't have something that makes sense. And you could do any number of quick fixes, but there will be just that. There will be quick fixes. And quick fixes are disastrous. They're not, in the end, a solution. The solution is this. It should take into consideration what the motivation is. If you were to ask most people whether they would like to leave their house in the morning, in the early hours of the morning, and set upon a trek of a couple of thousand miles, they don't know where they're going, and all they have are the few pieces of documentation and identification and hope. Do you think these people would tell you they're eager to go? No. These people have been driven to the edge of desperation. But the United States has basically abdicated its role, as have the leaderships of these countries. There should have been a regional approach to this. There should have been talks, ongoing talks. Look, they don't need anybody to tell them what to do. They see it. They see the end result. Murder rates that are just mind-boggling. They see the unemployment rates in their countries having no end in sight. They see that people are going without even the basics. This is not going to be solved by catching people, you know, the old catch and release kind of program. That is not a solution. This is an international question of a humanitarian issue. A humanitarian crisis. And we're acting as if, or we're encouraged to act, as if people are leaving their homes because, well, they would prefer to live in the United States. It's not nearly as elementary as that. These people are making life-threatening decisions. And it is... We should be able to approach this differently. But Trump isn't talking to anybody. And among themselves, these nations are not coordinating their thoughts and their efforts. So we have no coordinated plan going on. Everybody's doing their own thing. It cannot work that way.
Yes, but eventually the same problems are going to happen in the United States because the coastlines are all going to...
already. We are seeing mass movements of people from cities to places elsewhere, and we're seeing for the first time, I remarked about it, the largest number of people expressing a desire to leave the country altogether. They don't see that with these so-called policies in place, they would be able to enjoy a decent standard of living in the United States for much longer. So people have been saying, look, guys, get your act together. Put this as a number one priority. What can we fashion as a coordinated plan, as a resolve that favors sane policy making? One plan might be, instead of spending money, billions on a wall, you invest it in keeping people where they're living, providing employment, housing, and so forth, but to keep them where they are. We don't hear anything approximating logic from the leaders of these countries. And this is, and they're seeing the result of it in the absence of enlightened leadership. You have chaos, total chaos. And if they think this is going to be solved by putting up a wall, they're crazy. Because for
the plan that I'm explaining here would serve as an example for all these other countries to adopt also, and then they could also build these 1,200,000 houses for three families in each house to live in, at a cost of only $120 billion. If the budget for the military is 700...
The lack of housing is not what's causing people to leave. They don't want... They're not interested in a condo. They're interested in a quality of life that sustains them where they are. And people just are not getting that. The leaders of these countries are not getting that. But we'll see, because it's going to get worse. And then they'll have to deal with it. And it's never a good idea when you formulate a policy on the basis of fear and an urgent need. Bill from New York, you're on the air. Hello, Bill, you're on the air. Okay. Tony from Orlando, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, Tony, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, we're hearing you.
Hello. 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 I'm trying to get through.
Yes, we are hearing you.
Should I speak?
Yes.
Okay.
Are you hearing me?
Yes, I'm hearing you now.
Okay.
Okay. So my idea, a short solution, is basically to have representatives from the groups that are coming in. And we have to negotiate with them as stakeholders.
Well, if you don't mind my saying so, things are at a point where their experiences would be helpful and their suggestions would be helpful. But what we really need is an engaged leadership all the way around, which we don't have. Working together toward one reasonable or a series of reasonable solutions. They're not talking to each other. We have the President of the United States talking about, you know, he's going to bomb Mexico, or he's going to attack Mexico. You don't get anything done in an environment like that. You don't get anything done by calling people names, racist names. You don't get anywhere by being you know, obstreperous and nasty. Nobody wants to talk to you.
All right.
And so
part
suffers, what suffers is a good plan. What is the plan?
Okay. There's part one and part two. Part one is political. And that's going to be worked out because all these people are out of work, more and more going to be out of work. So the Republicans and the Democrats are going to come up with something. That's going to be solved because if it goes any further, there's going to be a bigger problem in the United States than on the border. So to me, that's going to be solved politically. Now, once that's solved politically, which it will be, part two, we have all these people on the border wanting to come in. We have to have a commission like Nelson Mandela had. What do you call that? I forget the name of the commission now, where the black people who didn't have any rights were given a chance to have this whole thing made up, and they ended the war. So what I'm saying that the people who are out there trying to get into the country, they have to be organized to be able to get leaders to sit and talk with the political convention that has been engendered by this chaos going on. As I said, the chaos has to end because if it doesn't, the country will end and the problem will be solved. So once the chaos
is... It's very simple. In the end, we're talking about migration and immigration, meaning the movement of people from one place to another place. There are laws already in place governing how these people and how this process is to be managed. The United States just isn't obeying the law. And we have that attitude being duplicated by the Central and South American countries from which many of these migrants are coming from. They're not doing anything illegal. Let's keep that in mind. This is not an illegal process, because when you think about it, who in their right mind who wants to break the law will travel with documents, will walk by thousands of miles to get to a port of entry, subject themselves to scrutiny, and make their identities known and so forth, and file an application? This is a legal process. It happens all over the world. This is not something new. This is not that they're doing anybody any favors. They're asking for refugee status because the conditions of life have deteriorated so much they can no longer see themselves even surviving where they are coming from. People are acting as if these people are just, they're just breaking the law. No. When you think about it, which lawbreaker will walk that length of a travel trek to a point, a designated point, agreed to by international law and the United States as a legal point of entry? And that is where they are permitted by law to proceed to apply for refugee status, which they will have to prove. They're not breaking any law. They're not scampering across the border.
Well, Latrice, everyone knows this. The solution is a political solution. We have the law, but then on top of the law, Latrice, is the politics. That's called the Republicans and the Democrats. And that's going to be ironed out.
Donald Trump has given the impression that these are, the spawn of Satan. These are people nobody should want in their country. They are obeying the law. They are obeying the law. The law says to apply for refugee status, you have to report to a point, a legal point of entry. And you have to fill out forms and so forth and apply for refugee status. Your case is to be reviewed. And then it's decided whether indeed you qualify as a refugee and so forth. And that's how it's done. They are not breaking the law. This is one of the nastiest things that this administration has done to make it appear that these are lunatics who just are descending on the United States, threatening the racial purity of this country. You know, that's what has been used as the cannon fodder for this fight. And that is wrong. You don't see Trump saying these things about people coming from, say, Slovenia. You don't hear this kinds of comments from people coming through JFK Airport and the northern border with Canada. Well, you get thousands of them every single day. The European people coming in under seeking refugee status or temporary protected status, they don't suffer this kind of vitriolic attack. Not at all. Trump is not proposing to build a wall along the Canadian border because we all know the truth of it. The truth of it is illegal immigration is happening right there at the airport. If you look at the Canadian border, how many people skip across that border every single day? But they're white. So they don't have that scar on them. From Detroit into the Canadian border and the reverse, from the Canadian border into Detroit. You don't hear this kind of scandalous behavior. So it is to Trump's advantage to distort what is happening. Migration and immigration and in-migration happens every single day all over the world. And yes, there are people who are trying to get into countries illegally, but they happen not to be the majority. Like I said, here we have people obeying the law. Trump has said and has ordered many points of entry closed down altogether. That's not legal. And that he could decide before anybody speaks to anybody who, if they're going to be allowed, that's not legal. They're not breaking the law by trying to get to a point of entry and submitting papers because their situation is so dire. But because this is such a racist country, people are likely to believe that every person attempting to come into the United States through ports of entry along the southern border, that they are criminals and murderers and rapists and so forth. He has said this in total contravention of the law. We should take a look at how whites, including illegal whites coming across the border, his wife, Donald Trump's wife, got a special visa, an Einstein visa, to come into this country. Einstein visas are for people who are so exceptional because of the work that they have done to contribute to the aggregate good of the world. He's against chain migration. Well, as soon as she got here, Daddy got here, and Mommy got here. So we have an openly racist government implementing racist policies. And that is what we have to fight. It is not so much about, well, you know, we got to provide them housing. We got to do a lot of stuff. As you would if you are a government that recognizes humanitarian obligations. But you have children being snatched from their mother's arms. You have children dying from dehydration in the desert. And you're going to tell me that this is what constitutes U.S. policy? And nobody in these circumstances is actually breaking the law? No. No. No good. No good at all. Bill from New York, we had lost you, and now you're back. Are you back, Bill? Why can't we connect with Bill? All right. He was with us then. Okay. All right. Willie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
I just want to thank you so much for yesterday. It's the first time I've heard that speech. It was really a touching speech. You know, teachers that the special ed teachers, they make a lot of money, right? Is that
they make money? But not a lot.
Well, I don't think there's enough money in the world to pay you, because You're really a special ed teacher. I mean, a special ed. Start with me.
You mean I'm a special ed teacher?
Education.
Not a special ed teacher.
More than that. Because I'm saying you're teaching special needs students all over the world and all over this country. But for some reason I see a little frustration. But that's what you do. That's what you do. So we have to pay you, not no institution, not no governmental agency, because they don't have enough money. Because imagine you're speaking to maybe 100 million people worldwide. But I'm speaking about in the United States, where special needs students, because the things you made so clear and so plain, you'd have to pay a brass monkey to misunderstand it. And we still can't get it. But I understand the position that you're in, and I see it for frustration. But again, it is what has been done to the American people, the dumbing down of the American people. This is a program that started about 30 years ago. Minister Farrakhan pointed it out. This is why it's so important when you follow that, when you study, not follow, study that, brother, like you study your Bible, your Quran, and your Torah, to see and understand what's going on. You see, we all bent out of shape about Mr. The so-called president. I don't know what that is. Now, it's on tape. You could go back and look at it. In his lecture, the year before he got elected, he said, if you elect him, he's going to take us to hell on a rocket ship. And that was said 2 years ago. So what is happening has to happen, because if it didn't happen, that would make the minister a liar. Simple. So that doesn't faze me one bit. It has to happen. Okay? Anyway, thank you. Thank you. Let me just say this. Okay. People have to wake up. right? Is that correct? We all hear that statement. We all know this. We are fortunate enough to be awoken a little bit. Now, how many people yesterday, you know what I was doing? I was sending everybody in my contact and talking to everybody about yesterday's program. And Gary did another program on 6/21/15. And you can go back in the archive and look at it. The same thing on Martin Luther King, who really killed him. So, you know, we already have we have something in place. The greatest part of the work has already been done. It's just up to us, the listeners, to have cards, T-shirts, and talk to people. Because that's the only way we're gonna wake up other people.
Oh, there we go. We hear the music. And that's our time. And contributing today. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.